criticism over the company's financial performance. USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Weather this afternoon, showers likely, mainly before 4 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 61, southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Scattered showers mainly before 9 p.m. This is tonight. Patchy fog after midnight, otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 55. Light and variable wind. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New precipitation amounts of less than an inch, tenth of an inch possible. Tomorrow, scattered showers mainly after 11 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 72. North wind 5 to 7 miles per hour, becoming light and variable this afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Tuesday night, scattered showers, cloudy with a low around 54. Light east wind, chance of precipitation is 50%. New precipitation amounts between a tenth and quarter of an inch possible. Wednesday, scattered showers, cloudy with a low around 54 degrees. Mostly cloudy with a high near 72. Light northeast wind. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New precipitation amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible. In a word, lots of rain.
Yeah,
Larry,
pretty much.
take it from here.
Thanks. This is NAMI's hour called Mental Health Matters. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses. And we try to help people who have a mental health issue. And usually that's done in a number of ways. One of the ways is we teach classes. One of the classes that we teach is called Family to Family. And it is a 12-week course, and we cover medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do in certain circumstances, what to say, what not to say. And we try to help people and families, or it doesn't even have to be a family member. It could be someone you know, someone you work with, someone you live next door to. But we try to get the person taking the class to understand more what the person with the illness is going through and how they react to certain things, which may not be the way everybody else does. We also run a support group. And that's every month, the third Thursday of the month. And it is at here at 52 East Main Street. And it starts at 7. It goes from 7 to 9. And you don't have to register anything. You just come. The class you have to register for, and you can do that by calling 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't have someone that mans the phone 24/7, but we have someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you as soon as possible. Everything we do is free. There is no charge for the pamphlets, the folders, the whatever that we issue at the class. And we just try to help people, and that's what it's all about. And again, the number, if you have a question or you want to find out more about the classes or support groups or anything in particular, you feel free to call 908-284-0500. Today we are very privileged to have with us, I'm going to try and say your first name. I don't know if I'll get through it or not, but I'll try. Gangadeep? Pretty close?
It's Gagandeep Singh, yes.
Okay. And Dr. Singh is the owner and executive director of the Center for Wellness, or Center of Wellness, I guess it is, isn't
Center
it?
Center for
Wellness, yeah, right. Okay. And so, Dr. Singh, we welcome you. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show again. And I'm so glad you finally got your mental health license. That was a long time in coming. A real long time, actually.
Yes.
Okay. What... I know we met at a conference the first time, and I know you've been on the show before once, about a little over a year or so ago before.
Yes.
And I would like you to tell me, you know, what exactly does the Center for Wellness do? What inspired you to start it? And who does it serve?
Sure. And first of all, I want to thank you for doing what you do with the show and for the amazing introduction that you gave to folks just now about NAMI and what NAMI does for people who are struggling with mental health issues or other issues related to that and their family members and the support that they can receive. I mean, that's really amazing work that's done, and the voluntary basis on which it's done is something to be, you know, to tip my hat to. And it's an honor for me to be here today and speak to you about what we do as well. So I thank you for the opportunity.
You're more than welcome.
So a little bit about myself. You mentioned, you know, I'm a doctor. I'm a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. I'm double board certified. So I've actually been in the field, you know, after medical school, doing residency and then fellowship. Mm-hmm. After wrapping up fellowship, that was in 2009 that I wrapped up fellowship. And after that point, I began working almost full-time and also started up a small private practice. And that kind of... the combination of those two things is what led to the Center for Wellness for me.
Okay.
As I was working, as I was seeing folks in private practice, I was fortunate enough to work in a couple of different places in my career so far that have provided similar services to what the center provides now. And I tried to glean from those experiences what I felt were the more positive experiences for the patients and their families and what was the best evidence-based mm-hmm. practice. And kind of bring my own style to that. And obviously when I was there, I was functioning as the medical director or psychiatric director was the term, I believe, in my one of my positions and otherwise a staff psychiatrist. So my role was the medication management, quote-unquote, component of things in these programs. And we saw folks from different levels of care. And we'll discuss that in a moment as well. And what I saw was, for me personally, I felt the clinical staff worked very hard at doing what was best for the patient and their families. Most of the time, knock on wood, that worked well with the overall agency vision. At times, whenever there's an agency with an administrative side and a clinical side, you may have some different vantage points on what to do with this patient or what to do regarding discharge or higher level of care or step down. And so some of those challenges kind of stuck out at me a little bit. And so I decided to look into starting my own agency that would serve these needs, but not be beholden to another administrative body or entity and just be beholden to the clinical work that I wanted to do for the patients.
Right.
So being a psychiatrist on the other side, you know, working in the private practice, I was fortunate enough that many of the folks that I worked with in these settings also wanted to continue with me when they discharged for private practice. So I continued to work with folks that were of quote-unquote high acuity and pretty intense symptoms. And you know, I kind of make a joke of it that I don't even realize the acuity of some of my patients, because to me it's just working with patients.
Right.
But because I've worked in partial care and obviously my training in inpatient level and stepping down from there, you see folks that have, you know, had to go to the hospital, things of that nature, comorbid substance abuse and things of that nature as well that we'll speak of. And so bringing that experience into my private practice, I think, actually opened my eyes to how these different levels of care really do provide a significant support for those folks that are not served quite ideally by your typical outpatient services. And so that's where the center came from. It really was a focus of a board-certified doc who wanted to do the right thing for patients, wanted to put the ethical treatment of the patient first, and wanted to be beholden to nobody else but the patient's needs. You know, we got to keep the lights on and pay the bills and all that stuff, but at the same time, we are there for the patients. And I've been lucky enough to have, with our agency, Mrs. Lori Schmidt, Lori Enquist Schmidt, who's been with us since the beginning, who's actually been somebody who's been supportive, you know, to me regarding the agency from the very beginnings of even the idea, when it started up in my mind. And she and I met at a previous place of employment, and she very much had some of the same focus of ethical treatment of patients and appropriate level of care and so on and so forth. And she's had many years of experience, even director level experience.
Okay.
Everything from outpatient to residential levels.
Okay.
And the folks that are some of the more chronically ill folks she's worked with as well. So she's seen the gamut of the need out there as well. So
she wasn't the woman that was at the when you had the table when I first met you.
She would have been.
Okay.
She would have been, yeah. Lori is with me all the time.
Okay.
She does an amazing job for us. And
because her and I, she and I were talking a bit.
Yeah.
And you were sitting there looking at me.
Yeah. But, well, yeah.
But, you know, but we were talking and it was just interesting, you know, and then you and I got to talking. And
Lori, I think, yeah, that's probably what helped you gravitate to the table and to Lori, is because she really has a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge that she brings to us. And actually, you know, I've assigned her the role of the Director of Mental Health Services.
Okay.
Because she really fits that role to a T and understands.
She seems like a very nice person. I mean,
she's a great person and clinically extremely sound and ethically her heart is where it needs to be. You know, she's got that direction that she's focusing on patient care and what's right for the patient. She wears a bit of a regulatory hat and an administrative hat. She does a little bit of everything for us. And she kind of jokes about how she's always looking with the residential eye for any potential risks to the patient in the area physically and things of that nature. But that's an insight that she brings to us that's wonderful.
Right, right. But so when you opened this,
yes,
your first goal, I guess, was people with addiction or mental health or both? Or
well, the goal has really always been both.
Okay.
As luck would have it and as kind of the unfolding of events took us, we've had the substance abuse intensive outpatient and outpatient services running for some time now. And that involves an evening substance abuse intensive outpatient for adults. We have the license for the teen IOP. Interestingly, that's been receiving referrals but at a sporadic kind of clip at times. So it's hard to coalesce a group, and that's ironic. That's a whole perhaps different conversation, that the need we understand is there from when we talk to schools, when we talk to student assistance counselors, when we talk to teachers, parents, but then the referrals seem to not be coming in at the level that you know the need is out there, which is an interesting kind of dichotomy there. And we've spoken to several folks in other agencies as well, and the primary substance abuse-focused adolescent tracts have been receiving, I think, less referrals than we think the need is. And there's many conversations about that I've had with folks.
And there's many reasons for that also, but, you know,
And we can definitely get into that as well, or at least what I think some of those reasons are. But coming back to what we do, so we have the substance abuse IOP for the adults primarily in the evening. Runs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Right now, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, sometimes we'll flex the schedule a little bit based on patient need and staffing needs. But it's a three-night-a-week program for 3 hours a night, which is the 9 hours as recommended and actually regulated by the state licensure.
Okay.
What we were really waiting on for the longest time, and you know, I'm not exaggerating, actually, when I say that the maximum cutoff of time that I was told was actually beat by 100% or more by the time we actually got the license. So we were told about a year took us two plus, maybe more, to really get finally the license. And now things have come through kind of quickly. So we're excited about that. So we've just received, at the end of March, but officially got word in April, the license from the Division of Mental Health Services for, you know, partial care, intensive outpatient, and outpatient level of care for adults across the board. And that license actually also allows you to see teens at intensive outpatient level and outpatient level. But we wanted to have a teen partial care as well. And so we've applied through Division of Children and Families for that license.
Right.
And we've received that license as well. So right now we are licensed by all different bodies. When you combine everything, we're licensed from 8 years old on up for mental health, for partial care, IOP, and outpatient services.
Which we'll talk about a little bit.
And we'll talk about what those are absolutely in depth. And we're excited about that. And we are going to start. We have actually put it out there and are starting to get the word out about the adult partial care and IOP. Those services, to me, logistically, and we can talk about how this works, but they can basically start together because of the timing and the overlap.
Okay.
With teens, you're going to have two separate times because of schooling during the year.
Yeah.
Right now we're coming up on the summer, so it might be a little bit different. But during the year, you've got schooling in kind of throwing a wrench in there. So you have to have certain services that you're providing for the teens, and obviously you have to meet their needs after school. And for that reason, the IOP for teens and the partial for teens is split up. And so that will lead to us, I think, we're going to hold off on the partial for teens for the immediate future. We're licensed. We're working with the insurance companies to get in-network with everything. But if there's a need from the community and the local referrals, we'll start the program sooner. Otherwise, we'll wait until closer to the school year for the partial care. The IOP is going to get started very shortly as well. So, again, a lot of detail we can get into, but that's where we are.
Let me jump in for a second, Dr. Singh. Can you please explain for anyone who might not be clear, what is the difference between partial care and IOP?
I'm glad that you asked, actually. That was one of the reasons that I was thinking it would be helpful to come on. So these are definitions based on state licensure, actually.
Okay.
And partial care is basically the highest level of treatment that you can get, as far as I understand it, outside of a residential setting, outside of staying somewhere overnight.
Right.
So when somebody comes in for partial care, it's basically 25 hours of treatment a week. And alongside that, we give some breaks for, you know, a half an hour for a lunch break. So really the patients are there for about 27 and a half hours, 5.5 hours, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. The tentative timing for that is 10 a.m. to 3:30.
Got it.
And for IOP, what you have is similar to the substance abuse IOP. It's a 9-hour program. So those folks are going to come in 3 days that they're going to work out with us in terms of what works for their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We try to keep them closer to the weekends and then something in the middle because we don't want to have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday program and then nobody's seeing them till Monday again.
Right.
That's not the best clinical care, so we try to spread it out. But the idea is 3 days a week, they'll pick 3 days, they'll come in for 3 hours, and they'll wrap up. And our groups are going to be situated and structured such that the IOPs, group needs are met between 10 and 1. So they can come from the first 3 hours of the program, leave. Our partial folks can have their lunch and then rejoin us for groups after that fact.
Now, are there teenagers who just are having such a problem going to school that they go to the partial care instead of school 5 days a week for the 25 hours?
Yes. So
that's what you're doing right now.
With teenagers, we're going to start that program up. There's another component that comes into play here with the teenagers, and I'm actually in conversation with a couple of different folks about it. I have been for a little while. There's an educational component that you need to provide for those kids because they're not going to be in school. So what I've seen in other places is they'll coordinate with a third-party agency or have their own kind of branch of employed professionals or contracted professionals who'll do this for them. And they coordinate with the school district and get the children's assignments, make sure they're completing their work and staying up to par. I believe it's 2 hours per day of classroom instruction.
Okay.
So we'll provide that as well once the partial gets started.
Yeah, I think it's a minimum of 2 hours, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So it could be more, but I believe it's a minimum of
more.
Two.
It can be more, yes.
So do you see that starting in the summer or the fall?
I'm aiming for the end of the summer, early fall. I think we want to get the word out there. I mean, understandably, right now, with schools wrapping up for the year, it's tough to really get in there and speak to them about what you're doing.
Sure. Right.
And in the beginning of the year, they're usually swamped, so it's tough to talk to them until about October or so.
Right.
So we're going to start putting the word out there and see when we can advise them of our services. and coordinate with them how we can make sure the educational piece is not dropped on these kids.
Right. Could you explain the basic education for treatment options?
Sure. So, you know, we've got at the highest level of care, well, it depends, I guess, on how you want to look at it. I mean, for teens and young adults and even for substance abuse and for some mental health needs, depending on where you are in the country and where you can find these places, there are residential stays. So a longer-term stay, sometimes a couple weeks, a month, sometimes as much as a 90-day residential program. Basically, that means you pack up and you leave home and you're staying there and you're having groups throughout the day, some recreational time, some downtime, a lot of work in the therapeutic milieu, having a psychiatrist possibly on staff, things of that nature. And then you step down to levels of care somewhat that we provide or more similar to what we provide. Mm-hmm. In between there, I think a little bit more common that we see, at least that I've seen in my experience, is acute hospitalization. And in terms of referrals to Center for Wellness or agencies like us, you know, coming from us or coming to us referrals-wise, going back and forth, the hospitals are a substantial portion of that for the partial care program.
Right.
Because the hospital is basically what we're doing, but it's a longer day, and they're staying there overnight. So, again, if anybody's had a family member or a loved one or even an acquaintance who's gone to the hospital, we know obviously they're spending the night there for a few nights. These days, most acute hospitalizations are a week to maybe two on the longer end of things. You know, before I really got into practicing, I've heard things prior to managed care and things like that of 30-day hospitalizations and even longer. That's not the norm,
Much longer.
Yeah, and much longer, actually. And there are still some facilities that are working with some folks that have some chronic issues or involuntary, commitment status that might be much longer stays. But for most of the voluntary folks that we see, because one thing I should point out is all the programs at our center are going to be voluntary programs. We cannot involuntarily commit somebody for an outpatient treatment. So most of the folks that we see, the vast majority, if they've gone to the hospital, it's been a voluntary stay fairly recently.
Right, and we're talking about not state hospitals per se. Talking about regular hospitals like local hospitals and stuff
like that,
which then they may transfer to places like Princeton House or Carrier Clinic or
something
exactly
like that. That's exactly right. So a lot of times people will go to the local hospital, to the emergency room.
Right.
You'll hear it on the voicemail. You'll hear it on our voicemail. If you're having an emergency, please call 911 or go to your nearest ER. So they'll go to the emergency department, and oftentimes they'll have a contracted or employed screening social worker, maybe a psychiatrist, who will then advise them about their potential needs. And then from there they'll go to a shorter stay psychiatric hospital. Some psychiatric units are connected to the main hospitals. Some are standalone. Some are not connected to...
A couple of the ones I just named are standalones. They're not connected to
Princeton
any hospital.
Princeton House and Carrier Clinic are both standalone, although Princeton House is part of, obviously, the
Princeton
system.
Princeton Hospital, but
And then you have, for example, down by where we are, Central State and Freehold, it's a wing off of the main hospital.
Right.
And Helene Fold and Trenton is something similar.
Right.
So there are, varying logistical setups, but at the end of the day, it's an inpatient wing that's focused on psychiatric needs.
Right.
So medication management is ongoing. Psychiatrists are seen on a regular basis. There's group and individual therapy. So you take all of that and you remove the housing component and the length of the day, shrink it down to about 5 hours. That's partial care. You come Monday through Friday. I kind of liken it to going to school for your mental health.
Right.
You're getting a break from everything else and you're learning about what your symptoms might be, how they may affect your goals, your day-to-day activities, your relationships, understanding how to cope with some of these symptoms. Obviously, my role as a psychiatrist in partial care and in IOP, if it's a primary mental health diagnosis, which is what we can now serve with the mental health licenses, if it's a primary mental health diagnosis, the regulations subscribe that we must see the patient on a certain basis. For partial care, it's at least once a week.
Right.
For IOP, it's at least every 2 weeks. And so that's what I was doing throughout my tenure at these other agencies.
Right, right.
And that's where I got the familiarity with working with folks, stepping down from the hospital. Because even when I was in my residency and fellowship, or I would say in medical school, until I went to the psychiatric rotation, I didn't know a whole lot about partial care or IOP, and I was interested in the field. But I didn't know a whole lot because that's not something that we know of in general terms in society.
Right.
And so I think you know, I kind of, it's similar to when folks go to substance abuse rehab. They're down in maybe Florida, which is a place where a lot of rehabs have popped up, and this very lush, posh, you know.
Yeah, a lot of places from up here send them down to
Florida. A lot of places do. And then they have maybe affiliated agencies up here. And so they're removed, and I kind of say you're in a bit of a bubble. And when you get out of the bubble, what are you going to do? When you come back into the real world, what's going to keep you grounded and get you where you need to get and help you proceed forward to where your goals are? And I think for substance abuse and very much so for mental health as well, if you've gone into that bubble of being somewhat disconnected from the stress of day-to-day and now you're reintroduced to that day-to-day stress, you've learned some coping mechanisms, but has it been really reinforced to the degree that you need? And so when you have 5 days a week of 5 hours of group therapy and then individual sessions and then a psychiatrist seeing you, that's kind of holding your hand to help you down from a higher level of care. That's where partial care fits in.
So then they can step down from partial care to IOP?
That would be the plan.
From one bubble to another?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. It goes from the highest level being inpatient to partial care to then ideally IOP. And we do provide outpatient counseling services as well.
Okay.
So they could technically even step down, provided our staff has the availability and the time with the census. The expectation is that they would step down to working with ideally even the same therapist that was their individual therapist in the program. And as things unfold, I know some agencies have done that. Some agencies have chosen not to do that. So we'll have to see, you know, logistically what we are able to offer, but that's definitely something we're doing at the moment. I wanted to point out, because I've mentioned group therapy, and I just wanted to kind of clarify. When I say folks come in for partial care or IOP, whether it's primary mental health or substance abuse, it's primarily group therapy oriented. So sometimes we get folks that say, I'm not sure about group therapy, I'm not sure about being in a group of people and things of that nature. And we encourage them to consider that, give it a shot, because a lot of times when I'm working with a patient one-on-one in the office, you know, I kind of give them the metaphor of, you know, it sounds like you feel like you're alone in this. It sounds like you feel like you're stranded on a desert island somewhere.
Right.
And there's nobody else that kind of gets it or that can help you out here. But if you're struggling with depression or anxiety or some bipolar symptoms and you come into a group and John Doe and Jane Smith are sitting there and they also understand what depression is like, it makes it more, you know, acceptable.
It's like
orientated. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what NAMI does, for example.
Right, exactly.
Exactly that.
Right.
So, you know, this is a treatment paradigm based on the similar idea, and I think it's very successful for most folks who come. Now, obviously, if there's severe social anxiety or something of that nature or, you know, other limitations that don't allow it to be feasible for the patient, understandably, we have to find alternatives. But I think the group therapy often has a lot of intangible benefits to it. And we are a small agency. We don't intend to become massive. I'd like us to be busy, but not out of control. And so we also pride ourselves on the fact that, you know, as Lori likes to say, again, Lori's been great for us, Lori likes, you can't hide. But that's important. You don't want to have a 30-person group where somebody's blending into the wall or texting their best friend and not engaged in the therapist who's trying to work with them and create a therapeutic group and discuss some very valuable information for them. And the groups vary from educational groups, some medication education, psychoeducation, coping skills education. Then there's process groups. We, you know, I chose the name Center for Wellness because I believe in overall wellness being obviously important. And, you know, we're not entirely naturopathic or anything like that. I'm not going to put that out there because that's not accurate. I mean, if we need to prescribe medication, that's what I do. But at the same time, the other side of it is that we do believe in, you know, the mind-body connection, which we think is very important.
Right.
So we work with folks to provide not just didactic educational and process groups, but some relaxation groups, some mindfulness groups, art therapy, music therapy. We have a friend and colleague, actually, who's a certified dance and movement therapist who would possibly come in for us on a per diem kind of basis. So we want to explore these other avenues so we can really speak to folks about, you know, how to channel what works best for them.
I know that it's a couple of the organizations we mentioned before, Prince and House Carrier, they have art, music, dance.
Yep.
And I had a couple of their people on who ran those programs. Mm-hmm. And they said, you can't believe the difference of that 45 minutes in that person from before to while they were doing this, you know. And it's just awesome. Michael, and I got another question just popped into my head.
Sure.
You have someone come to you, and they don't have family.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anybody to support them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help them get the support? Because I think everybody with either a substance abuse or a mental illness needs some kind of support to help them through. Because I've seen over the 20-some-odd years I've been doing this with NAMI that there are families who just have stepped back and I don't want any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to, don't call me, don't talk to me, don't either pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get back on the online, or just don't bother me.
Right.
And these people need help. And they need support. How do you work that? I know you've ran into it. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I'm going to step back. I'm going to come back to that answer in a quick second. But you mentioned family involvement, and that triggered something that I didn't answer for you guys earlier. So within the partial care and the IOP, there are family sessions as well. I'm going to double check on this. I don't want to misspeak. I'm fairly certain it's at least monthly family sessions for both levels of care. And within the groups, I've mentioned something I didn't touch on. I mentioned, working with an individual therapist.
Right.
That's a weekly session.
And
I believe that's the same for IOP, although that might be every other week for IOP. But I think therapy is weekly. It's the medication component that is really going to change based on level of care. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. Do you have a dump button? I don't know. But if a patient is there at a level of care that's called partial care or IOP, if you're at an agency that is not providing, the frequency of sessions that they should be providing for individual care or family therapy, they're not really doing what they should be doing. And that's a big component, too. It's not just groups.
Mm-hmm.
So just be mindful of that if you're looking at agencies to make sure that they're committed to providing what they're supposed to provide based on the regulations and based on just good clinical care.
Sure, sure.
So coming back to your question, obviously we would engage the family if there was family in those family therapy sessions. And what we would like to do down the road as we grow is have not only for substance abuse but also maybe for mental health kind of two parallel groups running on occasion, one that's treatment-oriented but one that's just for parents and family about educational components in a group setting. When there's not family, obviously we ask if the patient will give us the authorization to try to reach the family and try to advise the family of the importance of the family dynamic to come in. If, that bridge is, metaphorically burned and we just can't get the family engaged, then we tell folks, throughout psychoeducation and throughout the groups, they may make some social supports, although they're not really supposed to be fraternizing in the program. But people do become accustomed to one another and lean on one another for support when they're in these groups. So they may have some positive contacts with those folks when they leave. We also talk about support groups. I mean, with substance abuse, we always talk about, AA and NA, 12-step meetings. But even with mental health, I'm very much interested in understanding and sharing with folks what NAMI meetings are around there, what organizational options they have. And then, again, if folks say, for example, that for them their spirituality or their temple or their church is important to them, we ask them to engage in that portion.
Sure.
Not to say that we're substituting for family, but if that's not an option, we want them to have other supports out there and still stay engaged with us. And if there's a significant other but not family or a very close friend but not family, we'll ask for authorization for them to come in for the family sessions and work with some support with that patient.
Now I have a question. Are any of your therapists or staff also affiliated with some of these other places like Carrier or Princeton House, or is that verboten? Because I know sometimes you find that there's a really great relationship, and then when the person leaves and goes somewhere else, they've lost that.
Right. They're not actually working in those other programs. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody that's working, in one of the inpatient facilities. We've had folks that have, one of our ex-employees who maybe one day will be lucky to come back. Their family grew, so they took some time. but if they were willing to come back, they used to work at Carrier and had a great reputation there. Another one of our current folks who works with the substance abuse population has worked at New Hope, which is a fairly well-known substance abuse facility. So we do have folks that have great experience coming from those places, but they're not concurrently still there.
Okay.
Oftentimes.
I wasn't even sure if that's allowed, but I just wanted to ask.
It would be, I mean, right now our folks are, you know, the substance abuse program, the caveat here is, you know, whether or not allowed or not, that's one question, but logistically it's also difficult because we're looking at folks that need to be here in the daytime for us.
Right.
And then how can they keep that position as well? And
if
it's a different level of care, I personally don't think there's an issue because that's an inpatient level of care. This is an outpatient level of care. But it's unfortunately not really something we can do logistically.
Understand.
Okay. Do you find or do you see that your patients sometimes crash and either go back on drugs and then come back again, and like a, you know, like a winding clock? Because I've seen it in mental health many times. People will get, they'll be on medication, and they'll be good, and they'll be good, and then, oh, you know, they feel better, they'll stop taking the medication, and then they crash, and then they start all over again. And it's like, you know, when I teach the family-to-family class, the 12-week class, I say to the class, have you ever gone to the doctor for like an infection or something, or a severe cold or bronchitis, and they gave you an antibiotic and told you to take it for 10 days?
Right.
Raise your hand if you took it for 10 days. I would say out of 20 people, two maybe raised their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them didn't. And I said, what happened? Why didn't you take it? Well, I felt better.
Right.
So it's the same thing with a person with a mental illness or, you know, addiction or whatever. They felt better. So, you know, why bother? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And unfortunately, it's very hard sometimes to get them to understand and grasp that they have to keep it up, you know, and not just stop, whether they want to or not. They have to, you know, and it's tough. I was just curious, do you see this a lot or not a lot, but do you obviously you've seen it.
Right, and we do, and, you know, we've had more experience in our agency on the substance abuse side because the mental health programs are just about to get going. But on the substance abuse side, there's definitely relapse, and we try to work with folks to bring them back in, try to do family sessions with them.
Right.
Again, you know, try to get those supports in place, provide education, even do a behavioral contract that says, you know, if you're struggling with relapse, this level of care may not be working. Perhaps you need a higher level of care. And that was one of the things that I, you know, what we don't have is a partial care for substance abuse. And I personally didn't actually pursue that because I did not see in my experience, that the partial care prevented folks from needing a higher level of care. If they were struggling in IOP and then they went to partial care and they cleaned up for a couple weeks, they went back to IOP, it was not uncommon, at least for me, not uncommon enough, that they were being sent back and forth to IOP and partial care and keeping them in the program. I understand clinically the argument for that to a degree, and then unfortunately, cynically, I understand other arguments for that as well. That are not clinical. My concern is we have to do clinically what's right for the patient. So when they were relapsing or struggling and they were not able to maintain what they had to do with attendance, clean urines, obviously, you know, any reported relapses, we would refer to a higher level of care. And we'd bring them back if they were willing to work the program. We've had some folks that actually have not been successful the first time around but then came back and were successful. And it's not uncommon actually for other agencies as well. I've seen working other places that if somebody's coming back three or four times, they kind of realize, okay, this program, this dynamic, unfortunately, is not working for this patient, whether they're feeling too comfortable and not working hard enough or too uncomfortable and not opening up enough. We don't know what it is, but something's not quite working. We try three or four different times. Unfortunately, that does sometimes happen. On the mental health side, you know, I will say that that happens as well. The you know, the analogy of antibiotics and people not taking that is very common, in even in outpatient settings. I've seen it. I've had folks calling my private practice and saying, hey, doc, I need to come in and see you. I've got went off my meds about 6 months ago, and now my symptoms are back. And I'm like, I wonder what happened because you didn't come back after that last appointment.
Right.
But unfortunately, there's air of invincibility that people seem to have sometimes with mental health. And sometimes you just need to stick with the medication. I'm a very conservative prescriber. I tell my patients all the time in private practice or in agencies that I've worked at that I will recommend therapy first unless the symptoms dictate the medication. But if I'm recommending medication, I'm not making it, you know, I'm not making that recommendation lightly.
Right.
I think the data supports it. I think the symptoms are severe enough, and we want to help you. And I tell folks, you know, you might feel fine. If a diabetic stopped their insulin, they might feel fine for a little while until the sugar got way out of control, and now they're in DKA or something.
Right.
So you can't just rely on your gut feeling about how things are going. You know, if you decide to stop a medication, there's real consequences. And you know, you may not feel it working. And I kind of say it's not a Tylenol that you're – I mean, some medications have immediate relief, sure. But a lot of these medications are not like a Tylenol that you take it and your headache goes away and, oh, I can tell it worked because the headache went away. That's not how they work. They're working in the background like an insulin is working or a blood pressure med is working or a cholesterol med is working. And if you stop those and you have problems with those issues, you have some serious consequences potentially.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
With mental health, we seem to just not give it the same weight. And some of it's societal stigma. Some of it is individual stigma or cultural stigma or what have you. And that's a whole other hour-plus conversation
on
what's out there that people are challenged with when they're trying to get help, which gets in the way sometimes. But I try to make it, you know, I try to be assertive but not aggressive in my approach. And I say, you know, I'm not making this recommendation, again, lightly. If you don't follow this recommendation, I can't promise you the results that you want. And I don't know that we're going to have what we think we wanted to have with the results. So there is that challenge, absolutely, yes.
Sure.
But the frequency for the mental health, we'll see how it is. I hope that we can really provide that psychoeducation that folks need to stay on board.
Now, with the mental health, you're going to start an outpatient mental health counseling or an outpatient mental health and substance abuse counseling?
So by definition, everything we do is under the rubric of outpatient mental health and substance abuse,
okay.
But, because it's not inpatient,
right,
because it's not the hospital. But when I'm saying outpatient, I'm talking about, you know, quote unquote traditional outpatient, one-on-one sessions once a week, maybe a group session.
Right.
We are currently providing that for mental health and substance abuse. That can be a step down from the IOP. And there are definitely folks that can call and say, hey, I need to talk to a counselor for depression or, you know, my marriage has kind of hit the rocks a bit. I need to talk to somebody. We provide counseling on a general basis as well without meeting the criteria for these levels of care.
Okay.
You mean just a one-shot kind of thing? Or?
Well, a one-on-one individualized treatment, not a one-time session necessarily, but a one-on-one usually weekly or every other week kind of sessions.
Mm-hmm. And you have an adolescent mental health IOP you mentioned, right?
Right.
And what's the difference between an adolescent mental health IOP and an adult mental health IOP? I mean, obviously, if you're talking about adolescents, 18, 19, 16, 15, whatever.
Right. And I'll clarify that actually.
And an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little different.
Sure. And there's a bit of a challenge when you look at the adult population because the adults actually technically 18 and above is the adult program.
Right.
And it's 13 to 17 for adolescents, maybe exceptions if somebody just turned 18 but they're still a senior, something like that. But it's really 13 to 17 for the adolescent program. And obviously their immediate needs and immediate concerns are much more focused on interpersonal relationships and peer pressure and social issues there. Academic challenges,
right.
Substance abuse might be a little bit more prevalent in terms of experimentation at least, and things of that nature. And then behavioral issues where we have to bring the parents in and really involve the parents in appropriate, you know, behavior modification and management, parent management training. So there's a different set of things with kids versus with adults that you're going to look at. Plus there's, you know, the logistics of with the kids. You want to be in communication with the school. You want to be in communication with their guidance counselor. You're going to get actually a lot more data probably with kids than you would with adults.
Okay.
You know, if a 30-year-old guy walks in and has a significant other, doesn't really want you to talk to his parents, he's 30 years old, You might talk to a significant other. You don't talk to his work. It's actually you're actually a little bit more constrained.
Restricted.
Yeah, you're a little bit more constricted. So with the teens, you get maybe a little bit more data, but teens are an interesting world, so it's a little bit more confounding data sometimes. And then there's also, I think, to me, it's really the approach. I mean, it's never a one-size-fits-all.
No,
but
absolutely not.
To me, personally, even in my private practice, nothing against my adult patients who I love working with, but I really enjoy working with the kids, the teens, because if you can kind of open their eyes to the seriousness of what they're dealing with, and you can create that rapport, you know, you're influencing somebody's life at a younger age to send, you know, change that arc much earlier on that trajectory for them. And that's very satisfying and rewarding. But the challenges are somewhat what kind of information you're going to get from where. And obviously with kids, the parents have to be involved, so you have to utilize their input. You have to get their permission. Medication can be challenging depending on the parents, if they don't want to do medication, if you think the kid needs it. And just generally speaking, you know, I think it's a different approach in terms of even the therapists that you bring on board. And we have folks that have teen experience and some that don't have teen experience. And some therapists feel more comfortable with the younger folks. Some do not. Because it's a challenge sometimes to create that rapport. And you're going to get sometimes insulted, and sometimes you're gonna take one to the chin with a kid, metaphorically.
Right.
But you're trying to do it, you know, for that young folks, you're trying to do the best you can. And so it's a different character of personality sometimes that you have to bring out.
Right.
And the therapists, I think, have to be up to that. But I think we have a good mix of folks that can bring that for us as well.
Good. Now, I guess I got a question that someone reaches out to the wellness center, all right, and they speak to someone there either on the phone or whatever. What is the process then for, or the procedure for processing them as a client from that point on?
Sure. So I'm going to do a plug. Our number is...
Sure, I'm going to ask you that anyway, go ahead.
But it's 732-655-4CFW, which is our initials. So 732-655-4239, and that's the direct line to the office, or centerforwellnessnj.com is the website.
Okay.
Center for Wellness, and obviously the state of New Jersey.com. And what happens when folks call us, it's often myself or Lori, actually, that picks up the phone. More Lori than I, just because of physical availability there. And then we have other staff as well that are there, depending on hours, that can grab the phone as well.
Okay.
And so typically we ask the folks, you know, what they're looking for, what kind of services they're looking for. Oftentimes people will call and they're looking for something that we may not have, or they're looking for something, but then you realize they're not quite looking for what they say they're looking for. And you get some data from them and you understand what kind of level of care they might be needing. And then, you know, the typical process is, you know, find out insurance information, things like that. And then pretty quickly we can actually set up a tentative appointment with them on the phone right there and then, and say we can tentatively schedule for the next day or a couple of days out. Right. In the interim, we would call and check with the insurance to make sure everything is copacetic there, and then bring them in for a session fairly quickly. Now, when they actually come in, you know, the level of care that they need is determined by the assessment. So we have staff that are trained, and we have templates that are fairly detailed about different levels of care and what is, you know, the assessments for each of them, based on state regulations and our own clinical experience, what we think we need to know about the patient.
In other words, a therapist would...
The therapist would do one of the assessments. Right. There's a psychiatric assessment, depending on the need, if it's a mental health program as well. But with the therapist's intake / assessment, and there's different lingo in the different regs, actually, but same idea. When we do the assessment, we then tell them, okay, we think you would benefit from intensive outpatient. Sometimes it's kind of easy on the phone. You can say, you know, I've been in rehab or detox for 7 days, 10 days, and I'm stepping down, and I know I'm concerned I'm going to use if I don't have enough support, and I was using this much right before detox 10 days ago. You know that more likely than not, that person's going to need intensive outpatient.
Right.
And you're going to have that idea in mind before you even talk to them face-to-face. But when they come in, you do the full assessment, you make sure they meet criteria. Then you call the insurance company, and you have to work with them to advise them of the clinical benefit of that level of care, which is one of the less fun aspects of the job.
Sure.
But you're doing it because you want to get the patient help.
Right.
And, you know, we're working with the insurance companies to get in network. So Horizon and Cigna were in network for the substance abuse and the outpatient programs. Let me rephrase that. For the substance abuse and the mental health programs for Cigna, we're in network. We are making sure that they have all of our outpatient stuff taken care of as well for Cigna. For Horizon, we're in network for the substance abuse IOP, for the outpatient counseling sessions, and we are already signed and contracted but not yet executed on the back end for all of these mental health programs that we're adding. So that's a few weeks away. So we'll be able to say, you know, in network with Horizon as well. And Optum has just, which is Oxford and United Behavioral Health, they've just advised us that they're going to accept us into their network as well. So we'll be having those three larger insurance companies and work with out-of-network benefits for other companies and work with patients on that front if necessary. But we're trying to get in-network wherever we can with the larger insurance companies to minimize the impact financially on folks that are coming in for treatment.
Right. What about Medicare?
Medicaid.
Medicare and Medicaid, we're currently not participating in those. I've looked into those a little bit, and at this point, based on some of this is also, you know, this agency is my baby based on my own experience and my my efforts. And so my familiarity is more with the private insurance program. So I'm sticking with that at the moment, kind of an unknown on the Medicare and Medicaid at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you say your center has been open?
So we opened, we were in the space since 2014. We got the license for the substance abuse towards the end of the summer. And really kind of got the substance abuse program going, you know, by the fall or so. So this coming fall, it'll be 3 years. So we're about 2.5 years there. And, you know, 2.5 years there, and we finally got the mental health license.
Right.
So I feel like we almost just started. But it's been an interesting ride because we want to make sure that we're there to provide all these services. And we had to, you know, patiently wait for the mental health component. But we're very, very excited. I mean, nothing against working with folks who have primary substance abuse issues, but my passion has been the mental health all along because as a psychiatrist, I do this every day.
Sure.
And that was my role in the other agencies as well. And that's where I feel I can bring the most to the patient directly. My staff has been great on the substance abuse side, but I'm not an addictions trained psychiatrist. I work with folks with addiction all the time, but I'm a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. So to be able to bring my specific skill set to the agency and work directly with patients and be hands-on is something I've been looking very forward to. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes, and, you know, I think there's a perception that by a lot of people that psychiatrists are just so involved with the medication, and it's interesting to see your approach is so much broader than that.
I have a very different approach. I have to give, you know, credit to my attendings and professors throughout my training, and some of it's just personality style. Mm-hmm. I very much believe in getting to know the person first and the symptoms second, because a lot of the factors that make up the person and their life experiences and their current stresses and what's going on at the moment may be addressed in other ways than medication and may be affecting the symptoms. So you want to understand the whole person. I mean, as an aside, not talking about the center for just a half a second, even in my private practice, I see folks for an hour for the initial assessment, and then every assessment, every session after that is 30 minutes. It's never a 10-minute med check. I don't feel that I can really function effectively that way. So it's a 30-minute session, 5-10 minutes on the medication if needed, and then we're talking 20-25 minutes of some sort of therapeutic intervention, whether it be dynamic, insight-oriented, cognitive, behavioral, other work that I think can help the patient aside from just the medication.
Right.
And that's something that I think, you know, being at the center will allow me to hopefully lean heavily on my therapists and the groups and say, you've got all of these at your fingertips. You got to utilize those sessions. I'm here to help you with the medication, but that's a safety net. And we'll use it as much as we need to. But beyond that, you know, one day you might want to be off the medication, and depending on the diagnosis that you have, that might be possible.
Sure.
So,
and you know, the thing is, too, what you had mentioned just before, we have about a minute and a half to go. Okay. You had mentioned about the person, and I say this a lot when I'm talking to families and stuff. Don't forget, regardless of how bad that your loved one or friend or whoever is at this moment, there's a person beneath them.
Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
There's a person under that depression, under that bipolar, under that schizophrenia, under that paranoia. There's a person. And as long as that person is still there, you know, the other is superficial.
Yeah.
Yes, it sucks in plain English, yeah, but it's superficial because the person is still the person.
I think one of the most rewarding things I hear is when a patient tells me, I feel like me again.
Exactly.
Because that's the person
right.
that was underneath
yeah,
all of
that's
that.
That's right.
And you were able to help them with that. Yeah. And that's one of the most rewarding things to see.
In the last half a minute or so, is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to speak on?
I think we covered most of it. I mean, again, we're just trying to do the right thing at the center, and I'm passionate about it. I'm very excited about the future, and I'm thankful that I had the opportunity to come here and speak to both of you today. I thank you for your time.
I wanted you to give the phone number again.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, sure. It's 732-655-4239. That's 732-655-4CFW. The website is centerforwellnessnj.com. That's all one word, centerforwellnessnj.com.
Well, Dr. Singh, I can't thank you enough for coming, and we will have you back.
I would love to.
I would love to have you back. Okay, and the center is in Monroe?
We're in Monroe Township in Middlesex County. I forgot to mention that. Thank you for reminding me. We are right off of the Turnpike and off of 130 and off of 33, actually. We're kind of the southern Middlesex County area. We're right outside of Monmouth and Mercer as well.
Okay.
So how far are you from Princeton, let's say?
Princeton, about 20 minutes. That's kind of a running joke I have. If somebody says, how far are you from New Brunswick, Princeton, Freehold, or Ocean, like Jackson, the answer is 20 minutes for all of them.
Flemington a little longer.
Flemington about 45 to
yeah,
an hour.
That's a little longer
yeah,
for Flemington
a little bit longer.
Well, again, thank you, Dr.
So
Singh. I can't thank you so much for coming. You know, and I really appreciate it and all the work you're doing. And believe me, if anything that I or NAMI and Hunterton can do to help you, you have my number. You have my email. Call me or email me.
I thank you very much.
We'd be more than
it.
Happy to help you. Okay.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And we won't be here next week, folks, because it's a holiday, and they'll just run rewinds. So we'll be back again in 2 weeks. So enjoy your Memorial Day and remember the folks, the men and women in the uniform who not only died or are still serving the country to keep your freedom. Have a good one.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail personnel is your staffing solution. located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web.